you go back to focus on. By your mother, the blue dress you're dreaming of. I'm leaving Boston, it's gone. For so long, so, so long. And up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's 101.1 FM Freak Radio, in case you have forgotten. It's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides with special guests. Chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force, Linda Lemaster, police victim Eric, the anonymous, and some street folks who may be yo-yoing their way in. We'll see if they show up. Stay tuned, 6 to 8 for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.
Can happen in a moment. Sometimes it does when what could be is and what shouldn't be was. There are times when you gotta stand steady. There are other times when you gotta be ready. The window can open. It seems so wide, but you can never tell when it's gonna slam shut. One day you're a target on the firing ranges. The next day all of a sudden everything changes. When it all, when it all, when it all, when it all comes crashing down. It's easy to feel like you're standing still. Then the scene is revealed and you're on top of the hill. At that point you know you can let it go by or spread your wings and take to the sky. Real is what you do. Some moments are coming, others have came, and then there are those when you just gotta take aim. When it all, when it all, when it all, when it all comes crashing down. When it all, when it all, when it all comes crashing.
Welcome to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. My name is Robert Norris. That was David Rovick's number from his album, which we should be hearing some more from on the next 2 hours. Halliburton Boardroom Massacre, and the name of that was Crashing Down. It looks to me like we got a bunch of old David Rovick songs here masquerading as new numbers. I may have to talk to Uncle Dennis about this. There was David Rovick's benefit for, I guess, a concert. And I had thought that we had the latest albums, but no, it doesn't look like it. We will see. Maybe I'm speaking too soon. Anyway, you should speak if you want. You can call into Free Radio and be a part of the show. Our issues are rather persistent, consistent, and unfortunately resistant civil rights problems in Santa Cruz. And mainly I focus on the streets, on the police, on poor people, and on the machinations of the Santa Cruz City Council and other governmental bodies that are thwarting, ignoring, or directly opposing the rights of poor people. And that's something I encourage you to call in and talk about if you've had experiences in that regard. The number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, because we are indeed Free Radio Santa Cruz. That is the name of the station, and although some call it Freak Radio Santa Cruz, that's okay, too. If you want to reach the air, you can call in at 427-3772. If you want to catch me off air, you can call the HUF, Homeless United Friendship and Freedom Line, homeless civil rights group I'm a part of. It's 423-HUF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. And if you want to reach the station and perhaps give a PSA or a donation or get information or learn about another show or try to get your own show, you can call the station's voicemail, and that's 427-4523, 427-4523. Catch all these numbers, or some of them anyway. You can go online, download an application if you want. If you want to become a member of the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective, which is a not only a nonprofit, we're a money-losing group, no question about it, but we do put out things other than profit-making ventures. We provide information, we provide entertainment, we provide spiritual enlightenment. We provide whatever we can, and you, if you want to be a part of this, can do so by either calling a show and keeping us updated on the latest news, keeping us updated on what you think, how you think things are going, about what we're doing, joining the topic under discussion, or even, as I said, finding your own show, creating your own show, and you can do that by downloading an application at www.freakradio.org, which is where the show also streams. The show is also archived. It archives at the HUF website, huffsantacruz.org, H-U-F-F-santacruz.org, all one word, all small letters, HUF Santa Cruz, that is. And you go to the name of the show, which is the unwieldy but much revered and traditionally sanctioned Bath Robes Piers Broadsides, from the French revolutionary politician Robespierre, and the word bathrobe smashed together into the same sentence, same word, Bath Robespierre's Broadsides, referring both to my physique and to the messages I put out, which are sort of speeches, polemics, exhortations, or broadsides to the community looking to get you to stand up and be counted and say no to violations of civil rights and to defend your own civil rights and those of those around you. Well, I'm going to begin with some, what I think are some street interviews. Boy, won't I be surprised if they aren't. I think they are, because my guests are not here yet. Assuming they make it, that'll be nice. If they don't, well, I'll just proceed anyway. And I will encourage you to call in and be a part of the show if you've got stuff you want to talk about. What's been happening? We had a meeting with Councilwoman Catherine Byers, who is one of the 7-0 majority that, instead of dealing with police harassment, selective enforcement, criminalization of the poor in Santa Cruz, went on to simply champion the merchants' bigotry. And I really have to say that advisedly. It is bigotry to start reducing public space for poor people and, in essence, rubber stamping the police harassment that has been going on, well, for the last couple of decades, but more specifically and more intensely in the last year under what was Mayor, I'm not really a businessman downtown and a bookshop person, Ryan Coonerty, who is now still on the city council and part of the secretive downtown issues task force. I think that's what it's called. Along with Matthews, Mayor Matthews, and Councilmember Robinson. So we have, and now, of course, Mayor Matthews is leading the charge in these anti-homeless ordinances that aren't anti-homeless. We're assured they're just anti-behavior, bad behavior, except the only bad behavior that they criminalize are sitting on the sidewalk, playing an instrument, asking for spare change peacefully, or political tabling, that's the last one, I always forget it, downtown, or actually on, in any business district within the many forbidden zones. Because you see, the shoppers have to have their way at 95% of the sidewalks. So rules the downtown association, so rules their minions and toadies on the city council, and that's just sort of how it's going. We met with Catherine Byers in order to, we actually did a second meeting with her. And I'll be playing the rest of the first meeting. I played the first meeting, part of it, on my last show, on the Sunday show, I believe it was. Byers, I've talked about a bit in the past. She was mayor twice in the past, I think once in 1995 and once in 1999. She once actually was an advocate for homeless people and then changed her mind. Couldn't get a straight answer out of her, still haven't been able to in 2 hours of conversation as to why she changed her mind, except that I guess she wasn't able to be politically successful. Apparently, it's more important to be politically successful than it is to speak the truth and to stand up against obvious bullshit. Forbidden zones have very little to do with bad behavior, and they are a sop to the merchants and a clear violation of basic civil rights for the vast majority of the rest of the community, but particularly for poor and homeless people who have no place to do the activities I previously mentioned, or very few places to do those activities, given the fact that it's an increasingly gentrified environment. It's also misleading to the merchants to suggest to them that what hasn't worked from 1994 to 2002 and hasn't worked when it was even intensified from 2002 to 2009 is now going to work as we move into 2009 if you add some more forbidden zones. It's delusional to believe that, and it is irresponsible to encourage these kinds of delusions among the merchants. It really is. But try that, telling that to our great liberals on the city council, like Tony Madrigal and Don Lane and Mike Rotkin. You know, he's the board of directors of the ACLU. He should know. All right, we have a phone call. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Yeah, it's Yo-Yo.
Hey, Yo-Yo, why don't you just, you know, swing your string down here, Mr. Yo-Yo?
I will be there in about 20 minutes, Robert. I am smoking a bowl, and then I'm going to head on down there.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Well, all right, then.
Okay.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right.
And, of course, smoking a bowl is a candid assertion, and for adults, it should by this time in 2009 be absolutely nothing other than, you know, I don't know, I'm having a glass of wine at a cafe. But instead, it becomes the basis for a criminal prosecution, which Bob Lee, our district attorney, and Howard Scarry, our police chief, are continuing to pursue, in the sense that they continue to rack up more marijuana arrests, 50% more than last year, and 750,000 arrests nationwide. Santa Cruz is no different. It's following the same deadly path, and as 17,000 troops go off to Afghanistan, Obamatons, as the rest of the great cheering crowds roar their obeisance to Führer Obama, Santa Cruz needs to think twice about what's happening. And, hey, just say no, no, no. So, I'm going to give you a brief, it's a brief, actually. Or we can have a brief musical break, perhaps. And then we'll be back with some street interviews. I think we'll actually continue with the Catherine Byers interview, which I began playing on Sunday from about a week and a half ago, before the final reading of the forbidden zone tightening, the one-hour metering of the benches, the public benches, so you can't be on the bench for more than an hour after being warned, and the three snoozes and you're out, the recriminalization of the sleeping ban in the most explicit terms, and of every other minor infraction that the police can dig up, in order to placate merchants who somehow believe that more cops means more security and more force means more peace. I would have thought that liberty-loving Americans don't have that point of view, but apparently some Americans' notion of liberty only extends to certain people, and that's a real problem. I again invite those who are the anonymous critics who like to snipe at those of us who raise these issues in public forums with our names attached, myself, Becky Johnson, Mediana Brahmana, other activists who write about these issues on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and on the Sentinel forums, where it's just a real festering swamp of bigotry there, to come and talk about these issues, you know, air their fears and prejudices and grievances on the air directly, because you'll have an opportunity to do that, and we can talk about these issues. Hopefully have a rational conversation. You can even remain anonymous. Think of that. You don't have to say who you are. You can throw mud from the safety of your cave. That's what I find these folks do if you read the internet blogs. They don't want to say who they are. They just want to engage in personal attacks, and it's too bad. But the issues remain to be discussed. I mean, what can really address bad behavior downtown? I got a complaint from a woman today who, as she walked along, had a trumpet player blasting in her face for unknown reasons. She tried to indicate to the player that that was not a good thing to do, and he just blasted some more. And she was so angry, she wanted to shut down every panhandler and musician on Pacific Avenue. And I can kind of understand how that would happen when somebody gets abused. And my suggestion to her was, well, you know, you could have talked to a police officer, you know. And it's, of course, hard to do, particularly if you're not a big fan of police behavior on Pacific Avenue generally. But often the people who make these complaints about behavior on Pacific Avenue don't have any such compunctions. They aren't, you know, got no problem talking to the police, but they don't want to take the time. They somehow feel that the world should be made for them, you know, a direct route to their job, to their shop, so they can buy, they can purchase something without any kind of distractions or even potential complications of any kind. And that's, you know, that's their right. It's the right to have a gated community in Santa Cruz. And that's not the kind of community I want to see, and that's why I raise these issues so persistently as the civil liberties one by one fall away and people just sort of say, oh, yeah, okay, well, you can't do anything. You can't fight City Hall and so forth. Let's listen to another David Rovics number. This one is called How Far Is It From Here to Nuremberg? Perhaps a special chanty for President Obama and his vice führer, Joe Biden. Reminder about Nuremberg, which we don't hear too much about, or perhaps we hear lots about it from lefties concerned about national issues, but most people being locked up in our own jail around the drug war, and I don't know, for such offenses as talking back to police and then getting thrown on the drunk tag when they haven't had any drink, but there is no requirement for a breathalyzer test, and if Officer Winston wants to do that, or if Sergeant Lamas wants to do that, as they've both been accused of doing, at least Sergeant Lamas has. I don't want to say that's happened to Winston, though I think I may not be out of line in suggesting that. It's Certainly a number of police officers have been accused of not paying much attention to whether a person has even had a drink, but simply for attitude, thrown them into the drunk tank, and after that there's no real record because they remove the charge. The person gets released at 3 or 4 in the morning, and their property gets held in the police station, which can require several days to get back, which can be serious matter if that's your sleeping bag, your backpack, your survival gear. And it's... something that some people say, well, you give lip to a police officer, what do you expect? And the answer is, well, I expect a just and professional response from someone, even a compassionate response, given the fact that you're dealing with a situation where there are 1,500 to 2,000 people outside and there's space tonight for maybe 200 of them inside emergency walk-in shelter. These are real stats. They're not made up. They're not disputed by the council. They're just ignored. And when you raise these issues, what do bigots say? Get out of town, you bums! You know, okay, fine. We got to move beyond that to real discussing real solutions, or at least real emergency responses, given the situation. Anyway, this was the second half of the discussion that I and others had with Councilwoman Catherine Byers. It was in the West Side Coffee Company, which is right next to Safeway. And I believe it was, the Monday before the last Tuesday City Council vote. It might have been a week before that, early February of this year.
The infamous forbidden zone stuff from the council, the downtown ordinance discussion of Tuesday. Last Tuesday, we also had, you may remember, something you worked on personally a lot, the homelessness task force report.
I have some copies of that at home.
Yes, well, I hope you bring them to city council.
What am I saying? This is not Catherine Byers at all. I apologize for building up your hopes. We will actually be playing the interview we had with her, probably in part today, because we actually had that interview yesterday. This is the interview we had the same day. This was the Monday, a week and a day before the final vote. I guess the final vote was February 10th. This was February 2nd, I think, it sounds like. And Don Lane actually came in. He's another council member, and he also was a mayor in the 90s. He came and spoke with us at the same coffee shop, and I'm now going to play that. I'll give you some commentary at various points, but let's let Don and the questioners speak for themselves.
Because I think that there's a lot of important recommendations there that have been largely ignored. Let me begin by asking about that, although I know we're going to be talking mainly about the downtown ordinances. For the purposes of those who don't know what these recommendations are, they include such things as expanded armory use, family shelter, which actually was implemented, vacant bay at the Homeless Services Center, which I think was also implemented, safe sleeping zones in city parks, not implemented, although they're... Medical emergency motel voucher program, don't know if that was implemented.
That wasn't implemented? That exists, yeah.
Okay. I know, it existed before, though, didn't it?
Well, I can't say for sure, but I know there was certainly a motel voucher program that CAB operated. I think Homeless Persons Health Project may have some additional resources in that respect, but I'm not sure. It may be really the same program.
Okay,
but certainly there are people who, with medical emergencies, who are getting motel vouchers.
Then there was a letter on camping citations that were supposed to be sent to defendants and to the courts to advise people of their rights. I don't think that was ever implemented. Conflict resolution downtown was never implemented, but there was a significant effort made 5 years before this by Kimberly Callanan and Daniel Rubin, and $10,000 was spent on it. And actually, Catherine Byers talked about this at our meeting. She thinks that the third part of that recommendation, which was to not only involve the stakeholders separately, but then to bring them all together to confer about how to deal with a downtown code of conduct. I can run through all these, and I think, you know, you typed this thing up. You created this. You were the staff person who was paid $10,000 to create this, correct?
Whatever I was paid for my 6 months of work, whatever, I don't remember.
I think I gave $10,000 as a total. You didn't get $10,000.
That was the total staffing, and some of it went to the administrative assistant.
So. Right. True enough. We met with Catherine Byers, tell me if I'm wrong, gang, and we kind of, we saw that Byers was, though she didn't really approve really a lot about the recommendations, didn't think they do much, didn't think they really solved anything, weren't her first choice, she did feel that they were a response to the, her walking around during the city council election campaign led her to believe that this was, the downtown problems were, you know, paramount in the minds of a lot of people.
And to clarify, I'm switching subjects. I was bringing up the 1999-2000 Homeless Issues Task Force report, which actually has a lot of good and substantive recommendations. And you can find it online if you Google for Santa Cruz Homeless Issues Task Force report. But now I'm switching and asking Don Lane, who was on the council and voted in favor of the proposed forbidden zones, one-hour limit on parking, sitting on a park bench, and making three infractions, no matter how trivial, a misdemeanor, if not taken care of in court. So that's what we're talking about here.
And we kept saying to her, well, that's nice. I mean, we, too, are concerned about real problems downtown, like assault, you know, like people being abused, particularly by police, but also by other people. You know, drunken people creating problems, vandalizing, although chalk writing on the sidewalk we don't regard as vandalism. But we don't suggest constricting more public spaces as a nice solution to that, or giving three infraction tickets to make things a misdemeanor at the discretion of the DA. We think it's an illusion to try to present this as a solution, and actually may just so simply furthers an agenda that persuades people to go further in this direction. We understand, however, that you are also working on some kind of another task force involving everybody together again to deal with these issues. But I would like to persuade you to vote no on these ordinances, simply on the basis of the following. One, inadequate time and discussion, so that the community does not really hear about them until very late, and now they feel they're a done deal, so they're probably not too motivated to come out to the second reading because it was such a unanimous vote. Two, it's not clear, based upon, and thank you very much for bringing up all those questions at the council meeting, that no other council member did, even though they seem to be pretty obvious questions. Admittedly, you know, they came to some extent out of our briefing and out of your analysis. One has to ask, if you don't believe that constricting public spaces is a way of increasing the peaceful downtown, or perhaps you might believe that that's a way of driving away a lot of people for fear they're going to get arrested by the police, and because there are less homeless people downtown, that might make or less people who might potentially be problems, some of whom are homeless, some of whom are not, many of whom are street people, but that's a good solution to this situation. Because I suspect that maybe at your core you don't believe that. You think there are better things to be done than this. Maybe more costly, maybe take more time, maybe involve more input from a lot of groups.
Do you?
That's a good question. We're not going to let him talk. Don doesn't get to talk. This is my show, man.
I don't think that, you know, I certainly don't think constricting public space for its own sake is the solution. I think the question is a much tighter one than that, which is doing what these ordinances do, which happens to, as a possibly a negative impact, side effect, constricts public space some, also deal with some problems. And I think it does. And it's a problem that it did constrict public space for free speech and street performance. And so those are things that I'm going to continue to work on in the future, and especially I think I see some potential most quickly probably with street performance. I feel like there are a lot of street performers and people interested in street performance who got in touch with me and want to make sure that there's adequate public space for that. So I don't think that these ordinances preclude that from being resolved in a positive way. I don't think they contributed to it, so I'm just going to go at it from as a separate approach.
Eric, this is Don. Don, this is Eric.
Yeah, we met.
I'm sorry.
Of course you did. That seems like it's just a tighter call, but I think all these things, probably on both sides, I think the people who propose them think they will have a greater impact than they do, and the people who oppose them think they will have a greater impact than they do.
Who opposes them on city council? Anybody?
No, that's fine.
I mean, I know you all voted for it, but I'm hearing some doubt in your mind as to whether these extensions will actually produce the results that you want. And I know we just spoke with Catherine Byers, and she expressed quite a bit of doubt. She said she didn't think these were a solution, but they were going through anyway, and the solution was going to come somewhere down the line, not in accordance to what was being passed. And I hear you kind of on that side also. And so my question is, when are you going to get together and start to ask questions at City Council and say, what about other ideas? This was the only idea that was presented. What about some other ideas?
I did present some other ideas, and I did ask other questions. So I don't feel like that's really what's going on.
Anyway.
Right, because I just explained why I did. I think I did, which is that I don't think they created the negative impacts, extreme negative impacts that people who've expressed opposition see. I think they do constrict public space a little bit, and that's not a positive in and of itself. But they also create another tool for some of the impact, some of the negative things that are going on downtown, some law enforcement tools, which I think are reasonable. So it's just, I'm willing to try those things, but I'm also interested in doing other things. Like I said, I'm repeating myself now, but working with street performers, for instance, to make sure there is, if this did something that kind of feels like a setback in their ability to perform, then we should be working on making some changes or making some do some positive things to ensure that there really is adequate space for that.
Let me draw your attention to conduct on public property, which is the sitting aspect of the ordinance, and the amount of space actually left to sit. If you look at this, the only places left to sit are benches, which, of course, as you pointed out, are few and far between, and green areas. You don't see many green areas along this block, do you?
What I'm referring to are the maps put out by the city council, which have tiny bits of green along virtually an expanse of forbidden zone along Pacific Avenue. And, of course, the entire business districts of Soquel and Mission and anywhere else in town with businesses is illegal to sit on the sidewalk, illegal to set up a political table, illegal to street perform, illegal to panhandle, even peacefully or silently with a sign from a seated position. Because it's a forbidden zone. And I notice that one of the things we fail to do in this discussion with Don is to sort of say, you give the police more tools to do what? To arrest people for sitting down within 14 feet of a building because you make the zones bigger? To make it, you know, illegal for them to perform with an open guitar case because now it's 10 feet from a directory sign and 10 feet from a trash compactor as well? I mean, what do you mean you give the police more tools to deal with bad behavior? This is to deal with any kind of behavior whatsoever. All behavior is bad and illegal behavior, which involves any kind of activities of this kind within those prescribed forbidden zones. What is it that is actually being done that's positive here to deal with really bad behavior, like abusive comments toward women or men or anybody for that matter, or, you know, rude, spare-changing, which is already illegal to be abusive and spare-changing. And it's not clear to me what exactly they're talking about. Of course, there isn't. To me, the simple answer is there isn't an answer to that. But it's strange that we didn't ask that question. So that's our bad. In the studio with us is Linda LeMaster, who is a longtime Santa Cruz resident, mother, social service activist, former chair or chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force,
chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force.
Indeed, that was 10 years ago. And Don Lane, of course, the guy we are listening to an interview of, was the staff person on that body. I think you had 13 people who were on the committee. A couple of them were homeless, social service providers, merchants, a couple of legal workers, even
a couple of ordinary citizens. That was refreshing, like Mel and
Mel Nunez, yeah.
And the school teacher.
Christine Sippel? No.
No.
Lucy Kimitzer?
Lucy.
Yeah.
Lucy took homeless people in and got interested in it that way. I think that's more typical than we know.
Right. And I know you came here prepared to talk about Catherine Byers and what she had to say actually yesterday. You've reviewed that tape and hopefully brought it with you. But right now, maybe we can go through a little bit
that's fine
what
with
Don
me.
Lane has
really
said
come to react.
On the 2nd, I think it was, of February. We got a caller, though, so let's take the caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Linda and Robert. What's your name, caller?
Hey, it's Valerie. Turn up your guest's mic. I can't hear a thing.
Yeah, interesting.
Hi, Valerie. It's good you called in. Does it sound better yet?
I can hear you on the phone, so hopefully that'll be better. I had to turn down the radio, so hopefully.
Strange.
Why don't you try mic 3? Let's see if that works. It looks like mic 2 may be disconnected. Yeah, I'm sorry to the listeners. My apologies, it looks like.
Yeah, I was like, what'd she say? You're talking to nobody over there.
I think somebody disconnected mic 3. Thank you so much. I mean, mic 2. Or maybe not. Now, let's say something into the mic.
Something.
No, that's not working. No. Try mic 2 again. Thank you, caller. All right, anything you want to say also?
It sounds like her mic is working on this one.
How's this one?
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, thanks. Now I can hear it.
Thanks, caller.
Musical chairs. I flunked that the first time.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad. And I appreciate callers letting us know when we're screwing up here. You heard a bit about what Don Lane was saying, which is that it provides tools for the police, these current expansion of the forbidden zones and all that stuff. I hate to belabor these absurd little, essentially, PR moves to kind of spruce up, you know, to fluff up the merchants, as I call it, and they're, as they go down into the next depression, and they've got to have somebody to blame, right? I mean, it's got to be, you know, poor people, homeless people.
It's an easy target because those people, they are blaming because those particular people don't bark back very much.
Right, and they don't have much political pull even when they do bark back.
I mean, there's more to it than that, but I think that's a factor, that poor people usually get the sticky end of the stick because they're the ones that are left bailing when everybody else is scrambling for some federal bailout they're going to have to pay for the next decade.
So let's hear a little more of Don Lane and see if you got any thoughts. Just signal me and we'll stop the tape, Linda. And again, anyone calling in, if you want to be a part of this, you can. Just call in.
Say the number.
Yeah, thank you. 427-3772 is the number. 427-FRSC.
Well, it's not. I mean, it's an interesting, you know. It's not a lot of the. If you look at the total amount of sidewalk space, a great portion of it is not green. I will absolutely agree with that.
95%.
Yeah, I'm happy to say that. But in every block, even the most constricted block, there are 3 or 4 places that people could sit and panhandle.
3 or 4 places on this block. Not for panhandling, but just for sitting. We're not talking about panhandling. That's even more restrictive. This is for sitting.
Well, they are. I mean, they're 1, 2, 3. I mean, they're limited, but, I mean, if
by limited, you mean they're less than 5% of the sidewalk.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that if there are places people want to sit on the sidewalk, there's in this most constricted of blocks, there's still, in one block, there are 3 different places.
This is not the most constricted. There are every other block in town that's near a business district, you can't sit anywhere, period, because there's no area that's 14 feet from a business, period.
Uh-huh.
There's no place in the you're voting for a law that makes it illegal to sit on any sidewalk anywhere in town that's near a business district other than these very small places on Pacific Avenue. You're aware of that.
You know, it's frankly, I was only in wondering about it and wasn't fully aware of it because, like you said, we've got maps and diagrams that you're showing me here that do indicate it, and for all the other places, I don't have those kind of...
Would you then vote for it if you knew that was the case?
Well, I'd like to at least explore that question more.
But he didn't explore anything of the kind when this came up. Instead, he simply voted for it with very little comment other than the comment that he would look into problems with street performers when this issue came up at City Council for a second reading. Linda, any comments on this? Any thoughts about this situation?
My thoughts kind of echo your thoughts. I think the two council members whose reasoning I've heard, I think, is apologistic and maybe even insincere, because it's not the real reason they're doing this. And you'd think if they know anything about social policy, they'd know it isn't going to work.
We've got a caller here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Linda.
Hi, Robert. This is Cole, and we met the other day at Khyber Pass Restaurant, and you took interest in my Nietzsche book.
I vaguely remember that. Have you been listening to the show, or are you just calling in sort of out of the blue?
I'm calling in out of the blue. I met this man named Robert Norse.
I heard about that guy. Well, let me tell you go ahead, go ahead, Cole. Remind me of what we were discussing. And we're in the middle of a talk about the laws that criminalize homeless and poor people downtown, the new downtown.
That's actually what I was going to call about.
Oh, perfect. Why don't you go ahead and launch into your thoughts?
I find it offensive that in this time when, essentially the country's undergoing economic collapse for terrible decisions that were made by a few people that affect everyone else. What is the city of Santa Cruz, which is the beacon of tolerance and acceptance and non-judgment, do when the going gets tough? Pick on the poor.
We actually have another person in the studio. Yo-Yo, you're going to have to share the mic here with Linda, because Yo-Yo is a man who has gotten a ticket or two himself, eh, Yo-Yo?
I was told that the homeless are scum and that they haven't evolved at all. But, I mean, if you think about it, anybody that could live in the woods without money and still provide for themselves is actually more evolved than the society that lives by the rules and laws that the city of Santa Cruz sets down. I mean,
who said that homeless people were scum?
It was actually one of the Santa Cruz police officers that told me that.
The name of the Santa Cruz police officer?
I don't remember. It's a tall British guy.
Oh, so probably Officer Brandt.
Yeah. Officer Brandt.
You can tell if he has an accent like this, and he talks to you in this manner, he's Officer Brandt. He has a kind of a harsh tone.
We were all hanging out in front of the Del Mar, and it started raining really hard, and so we went and sat underneath one of the overhangs in one of the businesses that was closed. And the downtown hospitality guides came up and called the cops, and Officer Brandt came up and clearly let us know that we were scum, that we weren't welcome in Santa Cruz, and that we should just get our shit and leave, and that if we said anything back to him about that he would take us to jail, and that he would make up something to pretty much put us in jail.
Let me get this clear, Yo-Yo.
Scum?
Yes.
What exactly? I mean, try to be verbatim. Don't exaggerate. What? How did he put it in terms of what charge he would make up what he would do if you?
He didn't say what charge he would use, but he said that he would find a way to put us in jail.
Find a way to put you in jail. Cole, any further thoughts?
Well, I think it's funny that, you know, I understand that what's happening to Santa Cruz now happened to Boulder a number of years ago, where a bunch of rich liberals moved in and decided they wanted everything to be like they were.
Yeah, I mean, it happens all over the country. It's gentrification. Often these measures are pushed as kind of boilerplate matters by the downtown business improvement districts of different cities. Linda has something she wants to say. Go ahead, Linda.
You know, I can understand the concerns of merchants, downtown merchant clubs and stuff, but I guess I expect more from city council members. I expect them to understand the obvious consequences, at the very least, of things they do or things they take action on. And it seems to me that... sorry. that I'm dying. No,
take your time, Linda.
That passing laws is something the merchants are doing just as a backhanded apology to these merchants, because
the
know they won't work.
Doing that.
The city council. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah. Let me get you a glass of water here while you and you can get into this
thank
in a
you.
Minute. Let me grab some water. Again, the call-in number here is 427-3772. Let's listen to a little more of Don Lane's explanation as to why he voted for these ordinances and how he thinks they're going to help improve and end the bad behavior.
I think
we should bring that up.
So much focus has been on how this impacts downtown that no one even thought about it, and frankly, I didn't either, about how this looks in terms of other parts.
Can you make a note to bring that up at the council meeting? I appreciate it. Coral, I'm sorry.
Yeah, what if I wanted to sit down and I forgot where I'm supposed to sit, for example, and would the police know where these places are? And would they tell me, you better go sit over there? Would they be nice about it? I mean, what if they weren't? Would I be able to come to you and say, but, you know, we don't know where they are exactly.
Well, you pay your ticket, in other words.
My experience, which of course is different than others, is that I think the police will, in fact, do that. And really one of the kind of the explicit pieces of the, you know, of the ordinance does say that if people are in the wrong place, for lack of a better word, and the police will ask them to move, and if they don't, only could get a citation if they refuse to move. So it pretty much creates a way that the police are required to let someone know if they're not in the right place, and then I think they will. The police are, as this isn't even approved final yet, but once it becomes finalized, then the police will be able to, I think, quite clearly say, you know,
there is no requirement. I can interrupt you, Don. There's no requirement for warning a person on the sitting ordinance. And the sitting ordinance isn't changed significantly, except it's restricted even further. Read the current sitting ordinance.
Oh, this is the current as opposed to the new?
Right. And the only difference is that there's more.
And I'm not as tuned into what the old law is because I've only
been. Well, this is also the new law. This is the same as the new law, except it's more restrictive. There is no indication. I don't know if I have a copy of the new law. I'm looking for it. But they didn't add a warning provision to the sitting ordinance. The warning provision is a part of the public display ordinance. And I believe maybe a part of the soliciting ordinance, but I don't know if that's in fact the case. I don't think it is required for soliciting. I don't think there's a requirement that you warn someone for soliciting. So the only time you have to be warned is if you have a display device like a guitar case, is my understanding.
Actually, my understanding is inaccurate here. I've just got the ordinances in front of me. You only have to be warned under the move-along provisions if you are being told you can't sit on a bench for more than an hour, or you can't have a display device, open guitar case, political table, and so forth, for more than an hour, or if you are engaging in what is called conduct on public property, which is walk, standing, sitting, or lying upon a monument, vase, decorative fountain, so forth, bike rack, utility cabinet, railing, fence, planter, upon any other public property not designed or customarily used for such a purpose, or if you are engaging in hacky sacking or throwing a ball back and forth, then they have to. Yeah, that's right. Yes. And then they have to warn you under those circumstances. But they do not have to warn you if you are in a forbidden zone for sitting, for political tabling, for performing, or for spare changing, that you're in the wrong zone. There's no obligation to warn you under the old law and under the new law.
Well, don't they have a monument downtown for the first
musical saw
street,
player?
Street musician in downtown Santa Cruz?
Well, he was a musical saw player. He wasn't really. I mean, he was a famous communist anarchist guy. He was a pamphleteer, a wobbly. His name was Tom Scribner. But that's nice. They always like to give monuments to old dead people. Oh. But it's the new people that they want to harass who are actually alive.
Right. Right. I mean,
it's ironic that Coonerty, the man who pushed these ordinances and also pushed the parking lot law that makes it illegal to sit in your car at all and read a book. Your only right is to park your car and leave. You have to do this within a 15 minute period, but the fact of the matter is you're not allowed to assemble in a parking lot anymore. But that's Bookshop Santa Cruz had that statue moved, and that's part of the Coonerty family, to the front of their place. I mean, Santa Cruz likes to maintain its rep as a very progressive place, but you as a person on the street, Yo-Yo, may have a different perspective.
Right. Well, I mean, it's just that, you know, I was informed today, I just wanted to say that there's actually 25 states that have declared their, I think it's a sovereignty to the government.
I haven't heard that.
I was at Subrosia today, and I was having I overheard a conversation between two people, and I heard that there is 25 states that have declared their sovereignty to the United States.
Well, there's a theory of the individual having sovereignty, him or herself, which I guess can happen in any state, but it's actually a theory of constitutional law that I'm not really that familiar with. Guys like Ray Gordon, Richard Quigley, Clive Bustrade, people that we've had on the air that you may not know, kind of have discussed these theories. But what's your point?
Well, I mean, it's just that isn't there like a certain amount of states that if a certain amount of states declares sovereignty to the government that like that they can overthrow the government?
Unfortunately, the Civil War decided that states can't secede from the Union. That was back in the 1860s. And, I mean, enough people can always make real changes if they want to. That can always happen. Sometimes violent, sometimes peaceful, you know.
On a federal level, most of those kind of changes come with martyrdom. You know, people get killed in the crossfire. It's not necessarily the U.S. Marines on a college campus, but if there are enough people that really want something to be different well enough that they're all articulating the same thing, even the Supreme Court would bow a little bit.
It is true that if enough states, the legislatures of those states or conventions held in those states propose a constitutional amendment, they can change the Constitution. It's a very unwieldy, lengthy, expensive process, very hard to do. And, you know, they didn't, for example, blacks did not get their rights by amending the Constitution, though originally there were three amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, that gave blacks the vote, gave them the right to equal protection under the law, actually gave them annulled slavery, equal protection, and then the right to vote. But then those rights were all taken away in the years that followed. For 100 years, the black rights were gone until blacks got them back. And they didn't get them back by, you know, begging the state legislatures to take action or having the states hold conventions, which is the process that you're supposed to go through. As far as state sovereignty goes, I don't quite know what they're talking about. But we need to, regain our sovereignty here in Santa Cruz. And I know that you came to a Huff meeting yesterday because you were concerned about some stuff you'd seen on the streets. One of them was apparently Officer Brandt's discussions to you, directing all the rest of you to go out into the rain, as you described it. How many people did he tell to go out into the rain?
There were like five.
Dutch, why don't you come over? We have another guest in the studio. No, she's just a little bashful.
There were like four or five of us, and we were all sitting underneath an overhang of a building, you know, because it was pouring rain. And, I mean, we had all our gear with us. So we decided that we were just going to go sit underneath this overhang, and nobody was working there. It was closed. So we weren't bothering any customers. We were keeping our voices down.
Sounds like you might have gotten a cold in the rain there.
Yeah.
And you're in a wheelchair, right?
Yes. I broke my ankle, skateboarding at in the parking lot of the emergency room, Dominican Hospital. None of their security guards or doctors or anybody told me to get off my board, and I was skating around the hospital for like a good 10-15 minutes before I broke my ankle. And I guess that Dominican was stressing the fact that I might sue because they did my whole reconstructive surgery for free. I got 3 titanium plates and 12 titanium
screws.
You're just
a bad skateboarder, yo-yo. What's the deal here?
Slippery
weather? Yeah, yeah. Did you run into an ambulance? What's the deal here?
No, actually, they called me an ambulance.
Well, I'll call you an idiot. No, I won't call you an ambulance. Let me take that back. I'm sorry.
They did my surgery for free. They gave me my pain pills for free.
But when Officer Brandt ran you out into the rain, you were in a wheelchair.
I was still on my
you're on crutches.
Yeah.
But I've also seen you in a wheelchair. Is this a scam to get money here,
no,
yo-yo?
Sir.
Are you one of them panhandling frauds we've seen downtown?
I am
a ne'er-do-well bum who's rolled into town to soak our good people of their money. Linda has a comment to make. Linda, go ahead.
I don't know if this is fair on your radio show, but are you one of those curmudgeonly old people that thinks because they see someone in a wheelchair that's under 50 that somehow they're on the hustle?
Linda, I know that you also
high five, Linda.
Hey, Linda, you made some notes. Did you want to kind of, you know, give us your update before we move on? I know we've been listening to Don Lane, who's a council member. We talked to him about a week and a half ago, And he was giving his reasons for supporting the expansion of the rules to give Officer Brandt the power to drive people into the rain, to give Officer Brandt the power to threaten people, and that essentially when the city council backs up an expansion of these rules, it sort of, by implication, justifies what the police have already done. Linda wanted to say something
okay.
first, but then I see
you. Yeah, because I have to go soon. I shouldn't be out after dark. I might melt. I wanted to say, first I was startled when you and Don Lane on that tape said 3 inches in that area. I mean...
No, 3 places to sit. What Don was talking about is if you look at the maps that the city has of what is allowed for where you can sit down on the sidewalk that is not 14 feet from a building, 14 feet from a crosswalk, 14 feet from a kiosk, 14 feet, you name it, whatever, then... You only find 3 little places on some of the blocks. Some places, sometimes you find 7 places, but we're not talking about, you know, we're talking about a very small number of places to sit. And the idea, I mean, Don can say all he wants. Oh, well, you know, there's all these places. These are places to sit. And I guess we can put little golden triangles around these places.
We might have to. I don't think the city's going to tell anyone, including the tourists, that they depend on and use the money.
No,
as
I'm sure
their
they will.
Budget basis.
No, they will have their little folders and their little flyers out telling you where you can sit. But the issue is why? What advantage do you get by making everything criminal? Does that deal with bad behavior? I mean, most of the people who sit there are not engaging in bad behavior. So why eliminate everybody to get rid of the bad behavior? You get rid of the people, but the bad behavior can still happen in these other zones, or they can happen in the same forbidden zones that you're forbidding the behavior. And so I don't understand that, and I don't.
Robert, you're talking like this is a valid set of laws. The whole thing is some kind of renegade, sick cop out and evasion by the city council members. It's not going to accomplish what they say. It's not going to accomplish these things you're guessing about. All it does is make it harder for the people that have the hardest time to just move freely through society, which isn't a right that they're born with. At least the American ones, those of us born here, are entitled to move freely through this world. And the city will talk like they're helping the merchants because the merchants are pressuring them. But as far as I can tell, and I'm serious about the policy considerations I've tried to explore, at least in my own research, all they're trying to do is get less phone calls coming in complaining about the people who are different, who are downtown, or the fact that there's a lot of people downtown compared to before the earthquake repairs were done.
Let's hear, then, is there more you want to say?
I think it's disingenuous, but that's enough.
Is there more you want to say about from the notes you've written? Because I notice you've written some copious notes.
No, I thought you wanted to have me on to talk about things pertaining to the
Homeless Issues Task Force report. Yeah. Charming. Unplug it if we can.
But, I listened to the recorded version of yours and other Huffsters' conversation with Catherine recently, and I get the feeling, and I'm not reflecting this on Catherine or Don Lane or a few potential allies on the council, but the council as a whole is what I'm commenting here on. But it seems to me they're going to do whatever they can to keep from having to deal with anything that might help homeless people. And it seems to me that their reasons are all PR, because they want to be seen as like law and order guys, because that's what they're getting complaints about. And those approaches aren't going to help. The only way they would help is if everybody on these two so-called sides got together and worked out some stuff together. That's all I have to say.
Let's see if this mic is working. Say something into the mic.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. We got three mics now. That's good. And we also have another guest who's entered the studio. It's Eric, who has been attending some of these sessions. I think you were actually at this. You might have been at this meeting with Don Lane a couple of weeks ago. We're going to play a little bit more of it. Feel free to make some comments on it if you want. And Linda, I think he does. Do you want to talk a little bit about the homeless? Should we ask you to talk about the Homeless Issues Task Force?
Well, if you're going to, do it now, because if I cough again, I have to leave, and I should be leaving anyway.
Okay, well, this really is a subject for an entirely different broadcast, because we really don't have enough time. But since you came with that intention, and you were the chair of this Homeless Issues Task Force, and I know that you can also be, we can reach you by phone, perhaps on Sunday morning. Maybe you can call in again.
That's a good idea. Plan your questions ahead, and I'll try to do it. Or I might be in town. I'll let you know ahead of time if I'm going to be in town Sunday morning.
But I know that you spent you listened to the yesterday's interview with Councilmember Byers twice. Mm-hmm. I think it's really something we probably can't really manage as a whole subject right now. But what were the most? You spent nine or ten months on the Homeless Issues Task Force. What exactly was the most? Did anything substantive come out of that that Homeless Issues Task Force? What's your view of it? You were the chair.
That's such a loaded question. I could play with that all day and come out sounding like a city council member.
Any way you want. This was 10 years ago. People should know. So we're
talking
about something that happened a decade ago.
I think the substantive important thing is, and I didn't know this till I'm listening to Catherine respond to your questions, officers' questions. The important thing is there has been not an inch, or if there has been, it was backwards, of consideration for homeless people, not even at the policy level, not even at the superficial two-faced level, since 10 years ago, since they filed that report. And I want to have a beef with you, too, about it.
Go ahead.
You have continued to perpetuate a falsehood or a myth that Mike Rotkin announced, cutting me off to do so, when we gave our report to the city council when we were finished that piece of work.
In 2000. Yeah.
And he maintained that we were referring to the... There was a compromise proposal by people that came a few years ahead of us. I'm forgetting their names. John, somebody? What do they call it? Shuttle diplomacy between merchants and homeless people or other
high... You're talking about the downtown mediation report from Kim Hallinan and...
Okay. So everybody's saying that what Daniel that report Robin. Referred to is Kim Hallinan and Daniel...
Robin. Yeah.
Robin's... their idea, and it isn't. It is. I mean, the reason we didn't put a proper name in it is because prior to the task force, Lourdes Maynor and I were going around town doing
problem
that
with this
for individuals. Let me finish. And we had that model as much in mind.
Linda,
as
nobody knows what we're talking
table.
About. Nobody knows what we're talking about.
It.
I know, but that really is. I mean, we can. I mean, what I'm talking about, and what I'd like to see have happened in 1995. The city council spent $10,000 developing the so-called downtown mediation or conflict resolution report, and it had to do with other ways than these stupid laws for getting people together to come to an understanding of how to deal with bad behavior downtown. It involved essentially talking to large groups of people, seeing what the concerns were, what the interests were, what the problems were. And the city council then buried this report and did nothing with it. Now then,
they didn't like
5 years later, your Homeless Issues Task Force considered a number of things, including the sleeping ban, the camping ordinance, police harassment, and came up with lots of good recommendations, some of them rather radical, like eliminate the entire camping ordinance. That was one of your emergency resolutions. Unanimously adopted.
Yeah,
amazingly
unanimous.
Enough, by even the representatives of the Downtown Business Association voted for this 10 years ago. Peter Eberle voted for this. It's
evidence hard when you look at it. It does harm, and it doesn't accomplish what they claim it's for.
The camping ban.
It's hard evidence.
Uh-huh.
But people are afraid to look at it.
And the camping ban, we're not just talking about, you know, not being able to sleep at night. We're talking about the right to set up a tent and protective clothing and protective gear against the rain and the wind. Yo-Yo, you wanted to say something?
My mic's on.
Yeah, go ahead, Yo-Yo.
I say Tent City.
And be more specific. What do you say?
I say that we set up a tent city somewhere and that we don't tear it down until they change the downtown ordinances.
You organize it and I'll be there.
There's already kids downtown talking about it.
Okay, well, it sounds good to me. What
I actually heard it through somebody else. I heard it through somebody who said that a big group of people were talking about it.
In my experience, you need about 500 people that think they're committed to it to come up with 50 who will actually risk getting arrested, that kind of commitment. And we can do that, but that's what it takes.
So for all those who want to engage in tent city activities, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the off-air number. You can actually call Yo-Yo directly if he wants to give out his phone number. But you can also leave a message on the HUFF line. You know, whatever you'd like. I don't want you to have to, unless you want to, you're welcome to.
Yeah, you could call me at 208-313-4208. Again, that is 208-313-4208.
So if you want to contact Yo-Yo, give him a call if you're interested in the Tent City Project, 208-313-4208. I also want to introduce Eric and his alter ego, Zoran, who's not really here because we're not allowed to have five
you,
people in the
Santa
studio.
Cruz, Robert North is a god.
Thank you, Zoran. Now, Eric, why don't you pass the mic over to the infamous Eric there, who's just arrived? Eric is a man who's done voluminous research in the library and in the perhaps in the city council offices, I think both places, probing the psyches of the frightened, bigoted, and I would say misguided merchants and residents who have somehow feel that establishing massive forbidden zones and discouraging people from being downtown in these areas is a solution to bad behavior.
Yeah, there is a lot of them out there who seem to have just a little sensitivity for the plight of the poor and who seem to be more concerned about their own peace of mind and not seeing dirty people on the street, not being so inconvenienced as to have to, you know, step around people on the sidewalk, just a lot of that.
Well, what brings you here tonight? What issues are you here to raise? Are you just sort of going to be? Are we going to be continuing? If we can play some more of the Don Lane tape and get everybody's, you know, impressions or thoughts. Did you have something specific you wanted to bring up?
Well, if you have a block of time that you could give me, I would like to just give a little plug of my new petition drive.
Ah, yes, the initiative to change the powers of the police statewide to increase their responsibility to the citizenry.
Push the pendulum.
And, of course, then there's the infamous pendulum pusher.
And Zoran always wants to hear from the psychiatric world that he's a part of.
Zoran is a man who's had many experiences with the Dominican psych ward, not all of them pleasant. And he's hopefully going to become a strong advocate for monitoring new plans to increase the powers of the police around psychiatric disabilities.
Talking about powers,
people don't want to be taken away.
Talking about powers of police, I wanted to bring up that back in like the medieval times, like the tax collectors and the police from back then, they pretty much paid the king for the power to shake people down. And that is what the police departments nowadays have pretty much evolved from, is now, except now they're getting paid to shake people down.
Well, let's be honest. You haven't been, they haven't tried to rob you physically. They haven't said, pay us $50 and we'll leave you alone.
Well, no, but I mean, like, I'm talking about just any police department in general, because I remember one year I was at Burning Man. Everybody loves Burning Man, although MTV was there last year. But one year I was at Burning Man, and I saw this girl. She was riding her bike. She was riding like a beach cruiser through the desert down this road. And there was like a white vehicle with blue lights and a yellow vehicle with green lights and all these agencies.
I'm not saying that police agencies in other areas don't shake people down, but I try to be very specific in my criticism of local police agencies, whether it's Parks and Rec, deputies, California Highway Patrol, state parks and rec people, I've seen the occasional, you know, really just blatant corruption.
Look at what happened to Irish.
In terms of that, well, Irish was not was his property stolen? We're talking about a man who came up to some police who were harassing sleepers on the riverbank, and because he did not take his hands out of his pockets quickly enough, he was thrown dead to the ground, face down, and then beaten. At least that was the
same
story.
Same kind of story.
That was the same story.
But that's a form of brutality, but it's not about stealing your money.
Well, we're going to see if we can't do something about that.
Well, I hope we can. let me return, however, to the... actually, probably what I should give you, since we've turned to this subject, and I know that poor Don Lane is getting left behind here, but perhaps what he has to say should be left behind, since it didn't seem to have much worth anyway.
Yay.
No offense to you, Don. Do you want to make a statement briefly about what you're looking for as a state initiative, which frankly I think is a complete pie in the sky deal, though I agree with you completely.
It's a pie in the sky. Well, maybe we deserve really a piece of the pie.
Yeah.
You got my signature.
Well, folks, if this is really a democracy, if it is what we say it is, if we believe what we've been taught, and if we, if we want to follow in the footsteps of our ancestors, our forefathers, let's take our country back. And there are some things that we can do. And one of the things that we can do here in California is we can do an initiative. An initiative is pure democracy. We the people can come up with something that a rule or a law that we want to change or write. And we can submit it to the voters and vote on it directly, completely bypassing the whole power structure as tainted as we know that it is, with the corporate influence and the just the influence of money and complacency.
You wild idealist, you.
I am a wild idealist. But
I mean, it takes 500,000 signatures.
Somebody's
got to
try.
On the ballot.
Well, it takes 25. Yeah. It takes 25.
And my alias sign it too?
Signatures for me to get it gotta submitted to the voter. Legislative Council. Okay.
My alias actually is a registered
online
voter.
Petitions will not put it on the ballot. Believe me.
On. I need 25 signatures to get it on to get it submitted to the Legislative Council. Okay, and the Legislative Council then will look at it, and if they think that it has a chance of going forward, then they will draft it, and then we can worry about submitting it to the petition drive. But I do think that with technology, the state of technology that it, the way that it is these days with computers,
well,
I think we have it's a much easier thing to do than it once was.
No, it's much harder, but that's just my view. Go ahead.
Well, that's your view.
It is.
In any case, it just occurs to me that all these different subjects that we're talking about, we can meet these problems head on, all with one blow. Whether it's searching our vehicles out there on the roads for a flimsy pretext, or whether it's breaking some woman's arm on at Three Trees who just simply wanted to walk away and wasn't a part of whatever they were busting, or this person that you're talking about who was just wouldn't take his hands out of his pockets, or whether it's me getting punched the daylights out of because my motions were misinterpreted by the other cop when I was just tangled up with the police because they laid their hands on me first, or whether it's harassing the poor and the disabled and the homeless out on the streets here in Santa Cruz. It's all one thing. It's the police stepping over that line. We have let that line become really befuddled in recent years. Now, you know, I'm preaching to the choir here. Everything the right wing says is doublespeak, and it really oftentimes means the opposite of what they're really saying. There's all this talk about security since 9-1-1, our security. But what is the greatest threat to our security, the most imminent threat to my security as a Californian, as a citizen of the United States? Well, that is just hands down, no question, without any doubt, that is the police. The police are the gravest threat to my liberty. Period. The end.
Well, remember, a lot of people would disagree with you. They'd say the police are there to protect your rights. The police are there to protect your property.
There's definitely some give and take there. But what I'm saying is that pendulum, we were talking about pendulums, that pendulum
push
has swung way too far the other direction toward the right wing. Double speak.
With this federal money, I think every one of us should be able to drive one of those police cars and have a little policeman for ourselves. Mm. Don't you think, Santa Cruz, that we should all have one?
That's the leprechaun speaking.
So what we need is draw a clear line in the sand. If anybody was listening to me last week, that was basically my theme. We need to draw this line in the sand, and I hadn't really thought at that point what the best way to do that was. And I've obviously done a lot of thinking since then and spent a lot of time on the computer. And I think that the best way to do this is for one fell swoop, for us as Californians, and for those of you naysayers out there, look, there's always more poor people than rich. There's always way more poor people than rich, especially lately with the gap getting larger and larger and the group of rich people getting tinier and tinier. We have the votes. All we need to do is submit this to the voters, get it out there, and we, without any question, have the votes. And what could be more straightforward, what could be more commonsensical than to draw the line at this? The police don't lay their hands on you until you are suspected of a crime. It sounds really simple, doesn't it? But if you look at all these examples of all these things that we've been talking about, the poor being harassed, the flimsy pretext or the searching the woman's broken arm, all these things are examples of the police doing exactly not that.
Well, that's
they're
just
crossing
like what
that
I was
line
talking
before
about.
Anybody's been even suspected of a crime.
Well, that also touches on what I was talking about with what was his name, Cole earlier, our caller. That Officer Brandt walked up to us the other day when we were sitting underneath an overhang downtown when it was raining, told us we were all scum, we weren't welcome in Santa Cruz, that we should just get our shit and get the fuck out.
There you go. Well, what could be more, excuse me, what could be more fundamental
welcome
to our
home.
Rights as California citizens, as United States citizens, than our right to our person, than our right to be able to walk around freely without being harassed unless and until we've crossed some line and committed a crime. And so that's precisely what I'm proposing. And this is what I call it, the hands-off California initiative of 2010. Hands off. Don't be afraid to say, when the cops come around, keep your hands off me. I'm a United States citizen. I'm a California citizen. I have done no crime. You have no right to lay your hands on me. And if you do lay your hands on me, you are the one who has committed the crime. And if this passes, then it definitely will be a crime. So what I propose is that we put a proposition on the ballot to amend the California Constitution. And Robert is right. That requires about 700,000 signatures to get this on the ballot. But with modern technology, there's no reason why we can't do it. And the text of
4,300.
The text goes 4, like this, and then I'll let you have your radio 400, station.
433,971, according to
well,
Google.
This is an amendment. That's for right. This is for an amendment to the Constitution. It's higher. Mm-hmm. Anyway, goes like this: No officer of the state shall lay hands on, or otherwise restrain, assault, or detain a resident of California unless and until they are reasonably suspected of a crime or they are summoned or subpoenaed by the court. That's it.
Sounds damn good.
But
to
they went to the California
but they
Constitution.
Weren't assaulting. They weren't assaulting you, Eric. They were using moderate force to restrain you and simply making sure you didn't resist arrest.
No.
Yeah, actually, go ahead, Eric.
Like I said, the stage that we're at right now is just simply I need 25 signatures of California registered voters to submit this to the Legislative Council. The way you can do that is by going online to thepetitionsite.com. And I'm sorry I'm not as prepared today as I'd like to be. I've been fussing with the computer all day, and it's not up and running as much as I'd like. But if you go to thepetitionsite.com and just do a search, an internal search there on Hands Off California, and it'll my little thing will pop up there, and you just click on it, and you fill it out, and you sign it. You know, it's an electronic signing thing, and you know whether there's legalities here, I don't know, but we'll worry about that later. Let's just get your signatures on there, and let's move this forward. And let's not think negative about this. Let's think positive and think we can change California because we are a democracy.
Well, we certainly have the right to do what you're suggesting, and I also think it would be a good thing to have. I just looked at the latest, and you're right. There is a higher number of signatures required for a state constitutional amendment than 694,354, yes. According to what they've got here. Which is a lot of signatures, and what you really need, of course, are a million signatures because half of them are going to be, you know, the wrong registration,
yeah, I've been getting a lot
duplicates.
Of signatures from Australia and Germany.
Right. Right. Right.
One thing I'd like to say.
That doesn't work.
online signatures are not permitted either.
They're not legally binding.
Right.
Then one thing I'd like to say, too, is as far as to recap it with the policia, my friends, the policia that I love so much, is that when you are a psychiatric patient, you should fit quite well in Santa Cruz and enjoy that exploration. What else is Santa Cruz for but the redwood trees and the Frank Lloyd Wright houses? Which brings a point to me.
You're wandering, my boy. Back on track.
I think that the police should, that we, psychiatric patients, should, and the police should be able to cohabitate peacefully, but have rules to help the psychiatric.
I don't know about that.
But I think that the police should, knowing that there is the psychiatric world so present here in Santa Cruz, I think that they should have more of a kind outreach and an understanding. I don't think they need to be so abrasive and so quick to say, well, let's go to Dominican.
You're being pretty vague. Now, have you had some experiences recently you want to share with us that you feel are inappropriate police responses to a so-called psychiatric concern or concern about someone's mental health?
Ooh, this is a tough one, because what if I was in a bookstore, not just any bookstore, but the finest bookstore in town, and it's the most beautiful bookstore that, say, a mayor owns, maybe he doesn't own, but say he's part of, and I just love that bookstore because I'm a little cat. And I walk in there, and I want to meet the mayor, maybe, because I'm like a mayor's son, maybe, Ryan Cooney, I love you. And then maybe there's a woman that works at the bookstore, and she thinks I shouldn't meet the mayor, and so she sends the police downtown, and they have to ask me questions like, why should I be in the bookstore trying to talk with the mayor, and how come I can't go to my natural Esalen clinic where I deserve to be, because I'm sure the insurance at Dominican will pay for that, and that's a problem for me.
Now, wait a minute. Let me understand this. Coonerty, of course, is not the mayor anymore, but he is a city council member. We're talking about the bookshop
Good
Santa Cruz,
I love you,
who
Ryan.
His father, Neil, the supervisor, owns, and his sister, I guess, the two of them jointly. Were you saying that you were discriminated against there? Or the police were called because you asked to talk to Councilmember Coonerty?
Yeah, I wanted to meet him over those issues with the police and other things that I had experienced, like with Dominican being the end result. It's just a hideous game with handcuffs involved.
Yeah, have you called him up? Have you emailed him or requested a meeting that way? Have you left a message on the phone? There are conventional ways to get him, other than you can walk into his bookstore, certainly, but, you know.
No, Robert, I haven't had the courage. I've been in my shell. No, I did come in, and I'm planning to meet with Cynthia Matthews at my time, where I want to be impressive, but I have that kind of, well, I'm afraid to even go in because the police and the whole town must be against me because I'm schizophrenic, you know, and what is my behavior? So I do want to be able to have the right to go to some place like Esalen or Mount Madonna and do it with a team.
What exactly did you want? You wanted to talk to Ryan about how the police are treating psychiatric patients downtown.
Yes, I would like to ask him a lot about my father's work and what my father did, but he was the mayor, so I wanted to understand.
Your father wasn't the mayor of Santa Cruz, though.
No.
How would Ryan know anything about what your father did was a mayor of some other town, as you claim?
How would I ask him how to deal with that whole position? Is more my grandfather and I feel very close to him. Is just
the point is if somebody
is a wandering play of
Zoran,
wishing the town's power
Zoran,
gets a little bit of my
Zoran,
favor,
Zoran,
Robert.
Zoran. In other words, the question is, why should a council member, you know, I mean, if you want to talk to him about
I
a particular
your 15 years,
if you
and
wait
I'm
a minute, wait a minute, if you want to talk to him about
I love
a, wait,
it.
If you want to talk to him about a certain topic. He can either choose to talk to you about it or not. I mean, he's refused to talk to
it's
me
because of the butterfly.
For a year and a half.
The butterfly made me feel it.
All right. Well, I'm going to leave you. I'm going to let you flutter by.
No, I just like to talk with him to really ask about downtown ordinances and things like that that really concern my psychiatric rights. Because I'm just going to go get a coffee at a coffee shop, and then I talk to a stranger because I flirt and I'm a flirtatious one. And then it leads to, oh, my God, 911, and then what's he doing downtown? Well, the police could say something like to me, well, let's go get a coffee, you know, like the old days. Or, hey, how are you doing, you know, with your program of psychiatry? Well, you know, it's not good. I'm not getting the psychiatric insurance
yet. So you feel there's a better way for them. Have you recently been targeted by the police on the streets for, I don't know, flirting with somebody on the street?
Not since Ivan Drake took those four officers down with his bare hands at the food bin, which is where I live. That's where I was born.
Let's leave that one aside, shall we?
But I was born there, Robert. It was like in my house in the medicine room, and I couldn't believe that we had to be bum-rushed. I mean, it was just my
Zoran,
herbal tea
Zoran,
was knocked
again,
out of my
I'm attempting,
hand.
I'm attempting to put this into more elementary terms
political
for our listeners. So, but let's hear what your associate Eric here wanted to have us have a
child. I've been three before. Now I'm 10.
Thank you.
Well,
just as a
conclusion for that, first, just to address the one possible problem. You know, don't worry about whether the legality of online.
Again, you're talking about the
at the very hold the very it. Worst case
what
scenario.
What are you talking about again? So, for those who just tuned in.
Oh, for those who just turned in, we're talking about the Hands Off California initiative of 2010.
Okay.
To keep the police from assaulting or in any way detaining us until we're suspected of a crime.
Okay.
Okay, and in regards to the objection or the
possible
problem, the roadblock in our way, don't worry about the legality of online signatures, because at the very worst case scenario, we just send you a letter in the mail and then you can sign it. All we need is those names and signature, those names and addresses, and we can get back to you. So right now, all we need is 25 California citizens to get this going. So remember, it's the Hands Off California Initiative for the 2010 ballot. Hands Off California. Democracy in action.
So, Eric, that's something people can check out by going to the Hands Off California Initiative. I give you my views on that. I think it's a great idea. But I think that's similar to, it's an even more absurd plan practically than, let's say, trying to get an initiative at a local level, which was proposed actually yesterday by another activist, Mediana Bramana, who met with a bunch of us and Catherine Byers, who's looking for rent control locally. And he thinks that politicians like Rotkin and Byers, the entire city council, is not going to move or change until voters weigh in on an initiative basis. The problem is that however theoretically possible an initiative is, it takes a lot of money and a lot of organization. And if you can get that together, I say more power to you.
Well, let's give it a try. And I just, that brings up an interesting question. I wonder,
you're not close enough to the mic.
You more than anybody else would have a good opinion on this. Do you think that perhaps that local politics sometimes is harder even than state or national politics, because you're kind of dealing with I don't know, what do you find?
Well, it depends what you mean. I mean, it is if you want to make a change to the legislative process, it's theoretically easier in some respects because there's less people you have to persuade and there's more local resources you can bring to bear. If you're talking about the problem, however, with the local scene, is that you're also dealing with entrenched interests,
as you are
everywhere. There are entrenched interests across the country. And so it's a problem.
You're speaking to a broader audience, and there's going to be a lot more, much bigger pool of your possible
support. So is Fox News. That's the problem, you know. I mean, Fox News is much better broadcasting than you do. Although blogging and, you know, the Internet has added some issues to this. Linda, you have something to say.
I'd like to comment on what you started talking about.
We better turn up your mic, though.
Okay, I'll start over. I'd like to comment on something you started talking about a minute ago, which was the local suggestion of a rent control. You know, I was one of the three people to try to launch a rent control campaign before with Bob and Monica. And it sucks. You know, I had people coming up to me that I didn't know on the mall telling me my rent was raised because you guys are trying to do rent control. And so we had an effect, but we couldn't pass the initiative. We couldn't get the signatures, and there were people working full time. Oh, yeah, David Silver was the other signer. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that was about 10 years ago, and
and I'm still in recovery. But more important, we couldn't get the signatures, even though it seemed like there was a lot of popular support.
Right. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to. The point you're making, of course, is that it's very difficult to get these things in practice, although it seems to be in theory a very important thing, a very reasonable thing to do, because, you know, we think, well, we're a democracy. We're not a democracy. We're a plutocracy. You're trying to be.
Democracy in training.
Yeah, but this is not a democracy. This is a government of the wealthy, and it's a government.
It's a potential democracy. If you look at what the Wobblies, industrial workers of the world, and others.
Between the two.
Did after the Great
If enough
Depression.
People speak out and actually act up, as the organization used to say, then you'll actually get somewhere.
It's kind of a self-fulfilling thing, right? If you do it, then it is.
Yes, but to suggest to people that it's a likely alternative that you're going to get 690,000 signatures on a state initiative is, to my mind, bullshit. But nonetheless, what you're doing
we'll
is not...
see.
Yes, all right. What you're doing is not bullshit in terms
we
of...
We shall see.
I'm going to try.
And I think you should. I mean, I think you should definitely...
Thanks, Robert.
...raise the issue. And I encourage you also to come to the Cop Watch that's coming up on Saturday at 5 o'clock. There's going to be a cop watch in front of Borders. You might
That's
want to come.
That's in the evening. That's, I'll be there.
And then also at 3 o'clock in front of the Sub Rosa, we're having a meeting of the Human Rights Organization to discuss what to do at the city council meeting next Tuesday. They're going to be bringing up the no smoking ordinance in downtown Santa Cruz.
And a lot of these guys on the emails, they said, oh, well, while you're at it, while you're harassing the poor, why don't you throw in a no smoking ordinance in there? So many of these people said that. You wouldn't believe it.
You're welcome to stay. If you want to stay, if you're going to take off, you're welcome to go. You got to go. Thank you for coming in, Eric. Yeah. Yeah, come in again, and we want all the news all the time, or at least occasionally. Thanks. So I'm going to play a little bit more of the Don Lane interview that we had about a week and a half ago. This is a council member, Yo-Yo. It's just me and Yo-Yo in the studio right now, which... who actually raised some questions about the downtown ordinances, but then voted for all of them anyway. So it's, you know, it's kind of useless in that regard.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So let's hear a little bit more about what Don has to say.
Unless they're changing the ordinance in some other way that I'm not aware of, and you might want to, you know, make a note of that. I got some blank paper for you.
Yeah,
you want. Well, if you need more than that, just let me know. And you want something to write on, you can write on there. Here, you can write on this if you'd like.
I've got this.
He's got that. Okay, so Don is making some notes. He's going to bring up some issues at City Council, and he did. He kept his word to us.
He actually did last time, but this time he, whatever notes he took, as I said before, the only issue that Don Lane brought up at the second reading of the downtown ordinances was the issue of if street performers are having troubles, they can give him a call. He didn't raise the question of, you know, is there no space left anywhere else in town for anything? As far as street performing, political tabling, sitting on the sidewalk where there isn't a bench, or spare changing goes, as well as any of the other questions you're going to hear came up, not a word from Councilmember Don Lane. And I got to say that in part, I've got to say that we have to follow up on this before council meetings. Those of you who do meet with council members, when you do, and they promise you they're going to do something, remind them by email and or by phone that they've made those commitments. And then, of course, you can hold them accountable when they don't do it, or commend them when they do.
Since the last meeting, in fact, I think for, not just because he was keeping his word, but because I think you had some genuine questions about this issue, and you wanted them raised. Rick, you want to say something?
Well, I just wanted to. Just my voice in this is you have these new ordinances, okay? Now you got people sitting downtown that are peaceful. And they're sitting in a place where they can't sit. They're not supposed to sit. And so now you have the police moving them along. Well, by I think city council definition, those are not the people that are causing problems. Is that correct?
Who's not the people that are causing problems?
A couple of guys that want to come down and sit downtown on somewhere.
Well,
I would say not even, but just
no.
Somewhere.
Yeah, I get it. I think in general, see, this is why this is so hard for me, is that it, and why I'm both willing to do some of this and why it's not something that I just think, oh yeah, no problem. There's a tension, is that there are people who sit, you know, who really kind of occupy a portion of the sidewalk for the day in a way that really, just as we all, you know, both sides of this discussion talk about sharing the space downtown, well, to me, that they're no longer allowing other people to share it. And so that, now there's other people who sit in the way you've described who aren't, there's no problem with that. But you have, if the way that we've chosen to take it on is to say, you can sit on the sidewalk, you can sit on the bench for an hour, that's fine. But if you stay longer...
You can't sit on the sidewalk for an hour. You can only sit in very, very small parts of the sidewalk.
Right.
Very small places. But the point...
Doesn't the law take care of that, people occupying...
No, it only takes care of display devices and public benches. Those are the two things it takes care of. However... I'm sorry.
Well, let me say one more thing, which is why one of the other things that I'm going to be proposing, which I did bring up, which I think addresses at least a part of this, is that I think we should bring back a lot more benches. Since if we're going to sit, if we don't really want people sitting on the sidewalk as much as, and nobody, I don't think there's very many people who prefer sitting on the sidewalk to sitting on a bench. And it's the absence of benches that causes more people to sit on the sidewalk. So I would like to see us have more benches, add them back, but, and also to be really careful, because I know this is a, you know, it's a double-edged sword, is put the benches back in a way where there's, where they're kind of concentrated with other benches so that it doesn't end up even constricting more.
I understand.
The display device areas and the street performance areas, right, and the city.
With reference, though, to what your point earlier that you made, that...
So, Don Lane here is making the supposed proposal that, oh, let's have more benches because sitting spaces are being taken away on the sidewalk. Places where Yo-Yo you and your associates often sit.
Right in front of the Del Mar Theater will soon be off limits to all of us.
Right, and it's also a point, I mean, if you look at the bench that used to be in front of Chianti's on the corner of Cathcart and Pacific, it's
is no longer there.
It's gone. And the idea, you know, this kind of whimsical notion that Lane has that you can just put in a few more benches to sit on while at the same time making it illegal to sit within 14 feet of a bench, when in fact what people have been doing is they usually, you know, they'll sit, a group of people will sit around a bench as a sort of an assembly. Frankly, I've never seen a group sitting there for more than an hour. I mean, I've seen C.J. Stock, the musician, and his guitar for more than an hour occasionally. He's kind of disabled and kind of out of it. But I haven't seen people, I mean, people are kind of mobile. I mean, they're there for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, 5 minutes, and that even happens when you're sitting in front of the, I mean, you can't spare change from a bench. It's illegal to spare change from a bench. So if you want to spare change, you have to find those rare spots where it's legal to spare change. You can't do it from a bench anyway. This whole idea of having an hour's time limit on a bench is a way of breaking up the public assembly around the bench when you add to it the fact that there's also a limit on sitting anywhere near a bench, even for a minute, under this new ordinance. Right now it's legal to sit near a bench. After March 10th, 11th, 12th, 15th or so, it will be illegal to do that. What's the attitude on the streets toward this, Yo-Yo? What's your thought about that?
Everybody's pissed. I personally did not go to the city council meeting because I know that Officer Winston was probably there, and that I know how I, I probably would have said a few things that would have ended me up in jail.
Well, you can, no, you're allowed to say whatever you want, provided you don't threaten people or break the decorum of the council by speaking over your time. I mean, so you can come, for anybody who wants to, there is a city council meeting as next Tuesday, and you're allowed to speak at oral communication.
I'm actually not going to be here.
You're out of here.
Okay. Me and Dutch are leaving state tomorrow at 10:30 p.m.
You're hitting the road, eh?
Yeah, we're headed back to her mom's house in Idaho.
Okay, well, happy trails. Are you returning, or is this it?
Well, we're going to come back in after she has the baby in the summertime.
You're pregnant, Dutch. Yeah. Good luck. Give him hell.
Is the world ready for another Captain Yo-Yo?
We'll see about this. Let's hear a little more from Don Lane.
You know, that somehow, you know, there are people who occupy the sidewalk by sitting. It seems to me that what you're doing here with this ordinance, and you're voting for it, and you did, and you'll probably vote for it again, by making it very few spaces legal to sit on the sidewalk, very few, and no place elsewhere in the business districts other than down on Pacific Avenue, is you are saying that if a group of people wants to assemble and sit down, just to meet and assemble, they're going to find it very difficult to do it. Because they have to find a small place to do it and then share those spots with spare changers, street performers, and political tablers. So you're, in essence, doing a great deal to restrict public assembly in that way. And that is a real concern of mine.
You know, it's interesting, though, because I think that's an important issue, but I think it's also true, and I'd like to, you know, I'm open to challenge, you know, your challenge on this, but that I don't think it's that important that literally, say, in every block that there be a place where there be, you know, that's a really good public assembly place. I think in the downtown area, there, if there's a few where a good-sized group of people want to gather, that's adequate. But it doesn't have
public assembly, though. It limits people. If one group has it, it means another group can't have it. You're going to have to start scheduling who gets public the right to assemble. And what I want to say about this, Don, is that when this happened in 1994, there was a reason why many, many people showed up to protest the sitting ban. You were around and you saw it. It was a citywide sitting ban, so that was one of the reasons. But they were protesting on Pacific Avenue. They were protesting a law that said you can't sit anywhere on Pacific Avenue. This is essentially the same law with a few minor changes.
And actually, the tape is being turned over even as we speak. But, you know, when Don talks about that, oh, it's okay to have one big public assembly area, I'm talking about areas where Yo-Yo and Dutch and others can just sit and talk with their friends, three or four or five of them. I'm not talking about huge public assembly areas. But I'm talking about small public assembly areas where people could normally, in the old days, they would sit on the brick planters when we had the brick planters before the 1989 earthquake. And before the 1994 downtown ordinances, it was legal to have a group of people. Actually, it's been legal since... It's been legal. It's still legal, and will be legal until next month to sit around a bench and talk, or sit on, you know, three or four or five people. There was no showing that there was any problem in terms of the amount of time a particular group was sitting at a bench. In other words, there were no stats that showed people were taking up benches for hours and hours at a time. Rather, I think there was a prejudice against the dress, the manner, the economic status of the people who happened to be grouped downtown at different times.
Later, people are not as active as they were. Everybody might say, might roll over for this one. On the other hand, we're in a depressed economy where more and more people are likely to be becoming homeless and need to use public spaces. Parking lots, which had 10 square blocks of space, are now illegal to be in, either standing, sitting, lying, or reading a book in your car. This has been passed by the city council under Coonerty. So you have an even greater restriction on public space throughout the downtown area. It's hard for me to see how you can justify this. Even if you don't, you know, even if you say, well, there are still public assembly areas, you know, there's O'Neill's, that's an exempted zone, you know, there's maybe the area in front of Jamba Juice, and there's hard to think of other large areas where there is. Maybe there's a couple of others, but there aren't many areas for public assembly. This seems to go, you really support this?
Well, I'm willing to go with it to see how that works and also to at the same time talk to people who deal with first street performance and then with free speech activities. If they're finding that there really are, if they can show to me, you know, this is what we really need in order to have adequate space for what we do, I'm gonna bring something forward to do that.
How long do you think, after these new ordinances go into effect, what's a fair amount of time to see if they're working?
Well,
6 months?
I'm telling you that I'm willing to talk about it right now with people. I don't mean to say that. If people are, as Robert is doing right now, saying, I don't think it's adequate right now. But I'm just saying, as I talk, you know, if I gather from enough people who are kind of working on these kind of issues and involved in tabling and doing street performance, if they really just right away kind of point out to me what's not working for them about this, I'm willing to work on it right away.
I guess my real question was, this is a follow-up, my real question was, where are the stats that are going to show that after these extensions go into effect, somebody can look at the two sets of stats, say 6 months apart or a year apart, and say, okay, this is definitely working, or this is definitely not working, let's come up with another solution. What, are we going to be able to do that at the end of this year?
No, we're not, but go ahead.
You will have to convince a city council member or four, depending on how you want to look at it, one or two to bring it up and four to change it. But the point is that that can happen at any time, and there's no guarantee that it'll happen ever.
And, of course, what Don Lane is not saying, that he will bring it up. He will ask to see if there have been any changes. He will ask for the stats. I want to apologize. One of the lines has been closed for the last hour for those of you who wanted to call in, but it is open again. So you can try calling in. If you try to reach the studio, you're welcome to give a call and you can go on the air. 427-3772 is the number. I am, however, all alone in the studio, so you only have me to talk to. My apologies for that, and my apologies for the line being busy. We're listening to Don Lane, council member, talking with a group of constituents, concerned critics, who didn't like his vote, supporting the increased forbidden zones against the homeless and other people who use the public space to sit, spare change, table, and street perform. And what I'm noticing as I listen to this is, however reasonable Don seems to sound, and he has a very reasonable sound, he's talking to people, he's to come out of his way to spend an hour to chat with people here at the Westside Coffee Company, which is where he's meeting with us. Because he's blithely accepting all these restrictions and all these this notion that bad behavior is best dealt with by criminalizing all innocent behavior in this area, and not even specifying any new bad behavior that needs to be addressed or dealt with, and not looking at whether this previous solution worked in the last 10 or 15 years, he is, it's sort of like saying, you know, the Patriot Act, let's see how it works. You know, and if there are any problems with the Patriot Act, you can come to me and talk to me about it. I mean, it's just, there's a kind of an eerie quality about it. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I hope this question isn't too basic or anything like that, but I'm just listening, and I hear you talking about the city council.
Right.
And it made me wonder, are there, like, divisions, geographic divisions? Like, if I wanted to contact the city council, is there some database I can look at that says I live on this street?
No, it's all city council members are elected at large. So any council member of the seven is supposedly your representative.
Okay, all right. Well, yeah, I saw something at the front of Gateways when they were talking about the parking meter expansion, and I thought, well, which council member should I write to?
Right, anyone. I mean, it's the mayor is Cynthia Matthews, the vice mayor is Mike Rotkin. And then there are five others. You might want to consider the ones that are coming up for election next, which would be, I think, Rotkin, Matthews, and Robinson, I think, are the three who are coming up for election next.
I thought about writing to Tony Madrigal. I've seen him at a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
There was a service for homeless people who had died in the previous year, and he showed up there.
Yeah.
And then also there was a neighborhood cleanup down over by the river, kind of off of Laurel Street, and he showed up there too.
Yeah, I don't have much good to say about any of these council members. Sometimes I do, you know, but usually I don't. And as a matter of general policy, I definitely don't. As Madrigal, he was probably better than Teresa's, who he beat out by a feather, you know, a very small margin in the last election. Was useless on the Citizens Police Review Board. He was on the Citizens Police Review Board for years. He got hated by the police department because he thought he saw what might have been racial profiling one Halloween, but he's never done anything real about it. You know, the one thing he's done for the last year is he's worked with a group called he's headed a group called the Coalition for a Community Dialogue on Justice, Racism.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I went to one of those talks.
But they haven't done shit. See, that's the problem. They had a lot of talk. They formed a lot of committees. They took a lot of complaints. And I guess that's something. I mean, you know, that's doing something. But did they propose a lawsuit? Did they propose a cop watch? Did they propose a series of demands on the city manager as to how the police should conduct themselves in racial encounters? No, not a damn thing. And I know because I, too, went to their last big general meeting in October. And, you know, it was just I don't want to say it was simply an election campaign stunt for Madrigal, which worked. He won the election. But I think, you know, it's just, if you want to see real things happen, unfortunately, you have to, I think, organize with members of the community who are not really, you know, on the city council per se. I mean, you go to the city council, you start your parade, you get your power together, and then they jump in front of your parade. That's how they do it. I mean,
okay.
I mean, that seems to me to be what happens with that.
Okay.
Hey, thank you for calling in, and don't let me discourage you. If you do write Madrigal and you get a good answer, please let us know.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
And phone lines are open, 427-3772. Here's some more from Don Lane talking to critics of his all power to the police department, more forbidden zones, meter the benches for an hour, and three infractions make a misdemeanor. But I'll talk to you about it afterward because I'm open to chat.
Both those things.
There was a 6-month, we're going to look over the downtown commission's, the parking lot law. It never happened. And when they tried to do it at the downtown commission, the police department stonewalled, wouldn't give the figures because city council refused to forward those figures.
We're just following up on this.
Yeah, but Coral's trying to talk to
them. Okay.
I'm just yawning, too.
Oh, she's yawning. Let's just get that in there, shall we?
Yeah, so the downtown commission was stonewalled and said that they had to go to city council to get stats about the parking lot.
And Keith Sugar and Christopher Crone got no stats from the police department in 2002 when this massive expansion from 6 feet to 14 feet happened that eliminated virtually all the sitting space on Pacific Avenue. And the point is, for me, not this particular expansion, which makes it worse. You're ratifying everything that has been done before. You're saying it's perfectly okay with us, what they did in 2002, what they did in 1994, and what the police have been doing to enforce this is all just fine. And what I find on my show is constant complaints and hostility to what the police are doing from people who are getting ticketed for this or harassed for this or treated in a disdainful way as though they should somehow know they have no right to sit down. And it just seems to me very bizarre that if you, as a traditional Santa Cruz resident who's been around for a long time, you would support this kind of solution rather than looking into other solutions. I mean, I understand a lot of merchants came to you, a lot of residents. You see problems downtown with particular groups.
But
you're penalizing innocent behavior.
Okay, I just have a practical question. I'm looking on your side of it, not that it's owned by any one person, but which of the merchants are the most vocal about complaints, and have you seen, if you've seen the ones that were sent to Cynthia, for example? Did she get all of them, or did all the council get to read these?
I think I probably got virtually all of them. There may have been a few here and there that I didn't get, but
in
email form. I never got a printout, and I wouldn't. You know, I mean, it really was hundreds. You know, so I don't just want to waste a lot of paper printing them out. I read them on my computer
and
screen.
And the nature of the complaints.
And they're just...
Nielsen, Badass, orders?
I would say the two areas, and it wasn't necessarily these merchants, but the places that are... that people reference most specifically often are around in front of the Del Mar, in that general area, and in front of Borders. And I think when I say in front of the Del Mar, that kind of includes somewhat new, you know, down to the New Leaf, the kiosk in front of New Leaf. Those seem to be the areas that I hear named most often. That others, you know, so many of them aren't so place specific. So many of the complaints and comments do not reference a particular, you know, part of the sidewalk. And then there's a third, which is a little different, which is the people who just say, I won't go past Cathcart. So there's a whole other feeling about what's going on down there, which really I think is quite a different set of concerns. But people... Right, that's what I mean. That I think it's more of a nighttime thing, and it just kind of feels... It's sort of a different concerns, like people would describe that differently, and it tends not to be about people sitting on the sidewalk.
It seems to me that...
Was it addressed... any of the bar scenes addressed in the emails, or was it just people sitting and panhandling and congesting the sidewalk? I mean, were there any complaints about down on the other side of Cathcart, you know, with the bars? And are there any ordinances on the table or proposed ordinances to deal with that?
What's interesting, I mean, I don't know that these... I think that the police are constantly going to those calls, too, when it gets kind of rowdy out in front of the bars and stuff. Uh-huh. But
there's ordinance passed about people in front of bars. You can't hang out in front of bars.
Don't ask for more ordinances. You'll get them, is my
opinion. There is one that I'm interested in, which would...
Notice here that it's when people get rowdy in front of the bars that the police are called. There's no forbidden zones set in front of a bar that will stop public assemblies there. Although, actually, it's illegal now to sit in front of the Catalyst. I'm not sure if that's enforced by the police at night or at some of the other bars. But, you know, it's again, it goes back to the issue of, do you criminalize bad behavior, or do you criminalize the presence of people whose appearance you don't like in public, you know, in public places, and make it difficult for them to be there?
Isn't particularly directed at that. In fact, the opposition will probably mostly come from the people you're talking about is not smoking on Pacific Avenue.
Oh, yes, smoking tobacco. Okay.
So that's one thing that I think is worth looking into, and it's not to address the gathering in front of bars.
Let me get back to these ordinances.
Okay.
And,
okay.
You know, but and I'm not just directed to you, but to everybody. I mean, you know, it sounds like, and I say this just to everybody, just as at this meeting, that what's needed is for the city council to see a lot of protest against these ordinances. If they see a lot of protest against these ordinances, then they may or may not respond, but they're more likely to. It's clear that rational dialogue doesn't have much place here, because you're not going to ask for the stats of the police department, for example, about how many infraction tickets were actually given in the last. I'd like you to do that, by the way. Are you willing to ask for the stats in the last 2 years of all infraction citations and that were given by the police in the last 2 years downtown, and very specifically, which of these infraction citations were for violation of what I call the forbidden zones? Because if the police are claiming we have a big rise in problems downtown, look at all our stats, because of the very laws you've created making all this behavior criminal that was previously innocent, then that's, the community needs to know about that. And I think Catherine, what gave her the same question, I'm not sure if she's going to act on it or not, she expressed some sympathy for it. Maybe the two of you can both ask for those stats. But I don't think you can get them before the next city council meeting. Maybe you can. Okay, we'll be rolling on. I guess, can we stand and sit on the sidewalk?
In a planter box.
That's illegal.
But I think that's what I was trying to get at, yeah. Follow up on Robert's comment, was is there going to be a way for us to compare the stats for the end of 2008 versus the stats at the end of 2009 to see if these new extensions are working? And if they're not,
why wait? Why not look at the stats from 2001 and compare them with the stats in 2009 before the ordinances were expanded? I mean,
how do we do that? Because we're stonewalled every time we walk into the police station or the stat room. There's always a problem with this, a tape recorder on, or we need money from you, or, you know, it's like it's just ridiculous nursery school stuff.
That's another issue, but that's some, you know.
Well, it's another issue, but it's relevant to what we're trying to find out what's
directly
and what's not going to work.
Asking for the stats from the police department, who may then tell you, we would like the entire city council to ask us because we're trying to save money.
Right. Well, that's, you know, I'm going to see what I can get without it being, you know, it is, we've actually laid off people in the police department recently, so
we haven't laid off enough, as far as I'm
concerned. Well, I'm sure you feel that way, but
right.
The point is that it may be, you know, not a good thing that people aren't getting the information they want, but that's a system-wide problem right now in the city.
Stats, though.
But I will see what I
mean. Specifically, infractions for the forbidden zones. What percentage of the tickets written downtown are for these downtown ordinance offenses, not for ones that involve abusive panhandling, and I don't mean panhandling after dark, I mean where there was a complaint and an indication that there was actual abuse happening.
You know, just to raise the other, you know, major issue here, and at the same time address what you're saying, it's not going to be comparable what happens has been happening up to now after the three citation rule goes in place, because a lot more people who got 20 last year are not going to get 20 this year.
That's what I'm saying. Go back to 2001 and compare them with 2008, and then you'll get some comparison. You know, they might say, well, there's been a great improvement. You know, ticketing really dropped. We didn't have the same kind of problems. Or you might find ticketing has greatly increased. And you might ask yourself, wait a minute, didn't we pass these laws in 2002?
Well, I'm curious to hear, like, let's just pick one hypothetical and say that the tickets went way down in that period. What would that tell you? What would your conclusion be from that?
I would speculate it might be a number of things. I would speculate first it might be that people apprehensive of tickets were following the law suddenly and not getting engaged in that kind of behavior. Although, frankly, I would doubt it would ever happen, because the area was so expanded. It was more than doubled in 2002. It went from 6 feet to 14 feet for sitting. I would also, I mean, you might say An argument could be made that the ordinances worked in terms of controlling that kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. But what about the, and this is the key issue too, you take both ticketing groups, what about the tickets for abusive behavior? Did that drop? And if it didn't drop, what the fuck is the point of these ordinances for the forbidden zone? See, that's my point. There's no documentation, no statistical argument for any of this, except, and not even anecdotal information. I mean, the police haven't said, you know, it, having these forbidden zones has really helped us a lot. I haven't heard anybody say that, have you? No.
But I'm not really, I haven't really asked that question of other people,
right,
and they have,
I
mean,
the key question, isn't it?
In a way, but I mean, in the end, the key question and the key issue that everyone's raising is we're seeing a lot of, we feel like the problem level downtown is higher than
that's
it's been.
An important issue, no question about it.
And therefore, what we've done up to now has been inadequate, and we're going to try something else. I mean, that's
something
reasonable. That's a logical thing to do, even if the particulars.
But that's not. Yes, but this isn't something else. That's the problem. This is not a logical response to a logical question, and that's why I would say to you, you know, take the tomatoes and stand up and say, wait. I'm voting no on this issue. Yes, I'm throwing my turd in the punch bowl here because I think we really need to address the issue of what really needs to be done, not what you think might need to be done. Yeah. And the reason I'm standing up is they want us to move in 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
five minutes ago.
Wait till they come. Go ahead.
Look at him. He has no respect for our merchants.
I know this. Yeah. This is maybe hypothetical. Is there a way that they could make an ordinance, let's say, took some away, to say that there can only be a certain amount of people in front of a store or something, and then spin them out that way and not single out everybody? Just like, get...
Candy Jackson proposed such an ordinance in 1993 of no gatherings of... Yes, but it's the same problem. You're limiting public assembly directly. I don't know if it's the same problem. I'm not a legal expert, but that's how it seemed to me at the time. But, you know, we don't need to solve the problems with ordinances necessarily. The problem is you don't create a new law. What you do instead is you get the people you get together who are normally on the street a lot, and you say, here's what's happened in the last 6 weeks in this particular area. Can you help us out? What's going on? You've been around here. What's the real problem? You involve the people who are actually down there. I don't just mean, you can involve Sergeant Harms and all these other people, but involve the real people on the streets before you come up with new laws.
Can I add one thing to that? I spoke to somebody at one of our protests, and I'd never seen her before, and I'll probably never see her again, but she was from Hawaii, and we're talking about how the homeless were brought in a certain community to help against theft at night, violations of a lot of crack cocaine use at night, and the police asked them to help. I mean, the homeless were out on the streets late at night, and she said the crime rate actually went way, way down. And I think what Robert is saying is focuses on communication, more communication between the different groups. I think the homeless have a lot to offer. The people on the street have a lot to offer. Nobody's asking them anything. The only thing that's being given to them is what you can and can't do.
You're mistaken what happens if everybody is mistaken what happens instead of taking your agenda and ratifying, frankly, a series of measures that, and I'll quickly kind of bring up the next point here, that, you know, there's been no evidence that they've worked at all that I've seen. And so if you can get that kind of evidence, maybe there's an argument for it, but where's the evidence? But
what do you think about
communication is a good...
This is one of the things that, you know, Robert brought up earlier, too, that I don't know what I'm... have in mind exactly, but I'm interested, whether, I don't know if any other council members want to join me in this, in just having some more public meetings where people say, here's what I think we should do to improve downtown.
You might get some leverage if you can say, if you can hold off on the vote, say, if you know, you make an amendment to the ordinance that there would be at least a delay until this goes into advance, until the stakeholders are actually addressed. You know, there would be otherwise you won't cast a unanimous vote for it. They want unanimous. They want to have their little unanimous council thing. You are, in that sense, you have a power in this situation. You can say no unless I get the following changes. So
you have such an opportunity here to do you want to, as Steve Jobs said, do you want to keep making colored water and be in the soda industry, or do you want to go out and really have a chance to change things?
And unfortunately, this is almost the end of the tape, but we are into Uncle Dennis's show, from the cream to the dregs. I want to thank you for hanging with me on this edition of Bathrobes Piers Broadsides.
Well, either hang with you or you're hanging alone.
Put that beer down, Dennis. I want to hear no Guinness ale, for heaven's sake. This is exceptional.
Oh, come on, you gave it away, right?
No,
this must be a secret for the next half hour.
Oh, boy. Well, why didn't anybody tell me these things? I mean, first I get Robix albums that are a decade out of date, and then I'm abused about the...
A decade? 5 years is not a decade.
6 years, actually. It's 2003. A private joke. Anyway, thanks for being with us, folks, on this edition of Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. I will be returning on Sunday, I think it is. But if you want to catch some action on Saturday, come on down to the Cop Watch at 5 in front of Borders, and the Human Rights Organization two hours before that at 3 at the Sub Rosa Cafe. In the meantime, give a call to the Huff Line at 423-HUFF, and thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes Piers Broadsides.
Child of mine. Dream.
Yeah, welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Your Uncle Dennis here sitting in the studios tonight. Going to be playing music for you up until roughly 11 o'clock. And then, of course, we will be transitioning into the Hour of Slack, which hopefully you all can relate to. So, anyway, this is From the Cream to the Dregs, and every week we explore the music of the 60s and the 70s, so get used to it. We're going to be playing old rock and roll, blues, psychedelic, and stuff like that for the next 3 hours. Robert, of course, has already told you what tonight's Brew of the Week is, but anyway, we'll open that up in about half an hour as soon as everything straightens out around here. And then, of course, at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update. At 10 o'clock, our Spotlight Group of the Week, an entire hour of the music of one of the groups from the 60s and the 70s. So stay tuned for all of that, plus all the other great things that you find here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Now let's try some Eric Clapton.
One, two, three,
my world.